And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Son of Slovenia, cool as hell. He scores the ball and he rebounds well. Don't fight the future. Here comes Luka. Even losses feel like wins when you're with your good friend Tim. 77 Minutes in Heaven.
Welcome to 77 Minutes, a Dallas Mavericks podcast, part of the Athletic Podcast Network, the only Mavericks podcast to be fourth in the podcast conference, even though we have a negative point differential. I don't know. I think we do.
Are you saying we have the statistics of a losing podcast?
Yeah.
I resent that comment.
I mean,
the only thing winning about this team is this podcast, especially when all three of us are here.
It's true. Family podcast.
That's my nihilism seeping out. So
I know,
honestly, like Maverick fans they're more thrilled hearing us ramble about nonsense than actually talk about this team, which is like infinitely more nonsense what they're doing.
Before we talk about how the sky is falling, because we're going to. I mean, the sky's been falling. The Cavs are not the same Cavs that they were last year at all. Okay. Like, just this team is better. Losing to the Cavaliers, who defend their asses off. They really play great defense.
And you know why that is, Mr. Dave Dufour? The pride of the great University of Southern California. Future Hall of Famer, Mr. Evan Mobley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I mean, how nice would that guy be? Anyway, but this shouldn't – like, losing to this Cavaliers team shouldn't be something that causes an existential crisis. It should be the entire process leading up to the loss that really is the problem, and it's not just that loss. You can look at that game and you can say, oh, man, well, Luka made shots, but he didn't really play all that well. And everybody else stunk. But that's just how shit has been for a few seasons now. I just don't know why this Cavs game has been such a flashpoint for this fan base. It's like, sorry, man, this Mavericks team has played over its head, or at least the results have been over their heads mostly. And when they run into good defenses, they look bad. This is what they are.
That's Dave Dufour, and we've also got
the realist. Actually, the optimist. But my thing is just, it's not as bad. Like, and the losing to the Cavs is not all that bad, but the way that they lose these games is bad. Does that make sense?
And as you guys see, we've got a great show lined up today. That's something that I've heard hosts say. They always like to say at the start of their podcast, they're like, "We've got a great show lined up for y'all," which. They always do. Like, they're not lying.
No, but there's a lot of mediocre-ass podcasting.
I don't know how to podcast. Nobody ever told me how. But I hear other people doing that, so I'm going to say that we have a great show lined up. And I think Dave's rant before I even got to introduce him, which is 100% my fault.
This is...
I came in hot, guys.
This wasn't your fault. To go back to Dave's previous career, this was a wrestling match where the brawl starts before the bell.
It really did.
And you're trying to get control of the match, but Dave is just coming in there just wailing on people. That's called
I'm coming in like I'm a house on fire. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
the
reason I'm on fire isn't even that they lost. It's just, guys, take a deep breath.
That's a cold open, baby. Let's go. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess this version of that is that, we're recording Tuesday night. They played Monday. They lost to the Cavs. I agree. The Cavs are. You know what the Cavs are, and not to talk. This is not a Cavs podcast. This isn't Cavs for Mavs 2011. All the Cavs fans are rooting for the Mavs because LeBron went to Miami, and you know, this isn't the inverse of that. But I agree. The Cavs are real good, and the one thing I'll say about them is that going that big is a direct reaction to small ball. Like Cleveland is not the only team to have done it, but it is very clear that this reaction to the small ball trend that took over the league over the past 5 years is already happening, and it's happening with teams that throw out massive lineups and huge big men, and they literally fill up the paint with 21 feet of wingspan dudes who are athletic and mobile and, you know, just can smother a Luka Doncic heliocentric creator in the way that they did Monday night. And that was the most glaring thing when I wrote about the piece, the piece published Tuesday morning on The Athletic, theathletic.com, 77 minutes in heaven for a little promo code, if that's what you're looking for. Yeah, that's what I focused on. You know, the Cleveland sold out on Luka every time he drove, and we've criticized Luka before, and he has deserved some of it, but that wasn't his fault. That was not his fault at all. That was 100% on every time he drove in and made the right pass to an open shooter, they didn't hit shots. And, you know, I don't know why they're not hitting shots. I can't explain that. We've reached a point where I mentioned this in the piece, the gambler's fallacy is not that they're going to, you know, if they should be shooting 37%, they're not going to shoot like 40% the rest of the way to autocorrect to 37%. The best we can expect from them is 37% the rest of the way, or whatever they deserve. And at this point, I'm not sure that they aren't one of the worst shooting teams in the league by, you know, just the standards of what they've shown us. And they've shown us all season. And I don't know. I agree, Dave. I don't know why this loss specifically should ring alarm bells or make us think specifically worse things, other than it just being one of those losses that you look at it and it's like, yeah, they probably shouldn't have lost that. And it's another indictment on things we've been seeing all season.
Yeah, I would say, I'm Mike Pellucci, by the way. Tim didn't introduce me either. D Magazine sports editor. You've seen me before.
Let you introduce yourself. You can do it better than anyone else.
That's another wrestling gimmick. You know, I'll just be like, I'll be like Mr. Kennedy. I'll just do my own intros all the time.
Finally, Mike Pellucci has come back to 77 minutes in heaven.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, I mean, I do agree with both of you that reputationally, I think this loss hangs over things more than it should, because I don't think people realize that Cleveland is much better. I would say if there is one thing from yesterday that is a little disconcerting, it's that was the worst Kristaps Porzingis has looked since he's come back. And that's a game where if you are running into 21 feet of big man and you have a 7'3" big man of your own making max money, you're hoping he has a better performance than what he did. But again, everybody other than Luka played poorly. And this is something that as the league shifts more to this style, you have to wonder what this means for Dallas if they can't shoot, because there is no counter move, right? If three-pointers are becoming a little less valuable than they have been given these rule changes, but you are still playing this old offense, well, not even playing it, but it's the only thing that we think they can do well when they play, of play, you know, that heliocentric drive, kick, shoot, move. But A, your shooters aren't making it, but B, even when they do make it, the shots aren't as valuable as they were over the last several years, and you don't have a consistent plan closer to the rim. That's not promising, to put it mildly.
Yeah, and I thought Porzingis looked good defensively. The problem was that the Mavericks couldn't keep up with their rotations, and so it was just a flood of people into the lane, and you know, there's only so much you can do as a rim protector in that situation. But yeah, on offense, it almost feels like a Hail Mary at this point that they can get offense from anybody who isn't just, you know, that isn't Luka creating out of a pick and roll. And you know, they got a little bit from Kristaps, and it just felt like, you know, it felt like a godsend, even though, you know, he's not, you know, Dave, start talking, because I'm losing train on that thought, and it's one I've expressed a million times. So pick it up from here.
Well, again, this is sort of like the last pod we did together, Tim, where, you know, you start running out of things to say because they are just trying the same. It's like, we're going to try the same thing over and over and over again. And we know what that is. If it's not working, it's crazy. It's at least not the smartest thing in the world. And I will say that while I don't necessarily love what I've seen in the offense and stuff like that, you got to find something that works. And so throwing the kitchen sink, the comments about getting Luka more touches in the post area, I think that's fine. Like, everyone wants to hammer Kidd at every opportunity,
But if your shooters aren't hitting the open shots, at a certain point, you have to try to figure something out.
Right.
Luka's not getting to the basket enough. Well, I don't know. I mean, they weren't hitting at the beginning of last year either when there were no fans.
This is inexplicable.
They just, I don't know, man. Does Luka put a funny spin on the ball? Do we need another Tim Cato investigative report? I mean, maybe the Slovenian spin and only guys that play on the Slovenian national team can shoot for Luka. I don't know what the deal is, but this happened at the start of last year and they underperformed where we thought they should be. Same thing's happening here, although they're still collecting wins here and there. So I don't know. It's just, it's a make or miss league. And for them, we can't really even judge them because they're missing so many of the shots that they should be making.
Mike, is it possible that Tim Hardaway Jr. and Dorian Finney-Smith specifically just overperformed the past couple of years? I can't explain Bullock, who is a much more proven shooter, but even the largest sample sizes in the NBA are kind of small. Players can overperform, especially shooting, for a season or two. Is that what's happening? Is because you're right. I mean, almost 20 games in, it almost feels inexplicable, and it doesn't feel like Rick Carlisle isn't out there like making them shoot better. You know, these are open shots. It's not, you know, it's spacing, it's coaching, it's so many things, but it's not, when it's open shots, at some point it just comes down to why are they not making them?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a lot more inclined to wonder anything about Dorian than I am Tim. I think Tim will be fine because the volume of shots that guy has taken in a variety of situations, right? So many of Dorian Finney-Smith's three-point shots, especially the approved ones, are open looks. And I think it speaks to what the league thinks of Dorian Finney-Smith, that he still gets a lot of open shots. They don't respect him. With Tim, he's taken shots in all sorts of situations because the league does, and he has made them in pretty much every type of way he can. And that goes, you know, last year there was a lot more created offense inside the arc, right? I think he'll figure it out. I do wonder if part of him figuring it out is changing some of the personnel he's playing with, right? Like, do you stagger minutes more to, I don't know. I mean, do you have him spend even more time with Luka? That was when he initially broke out. That was the thesis that you so eloquently put in a piece that you had a couple years ago. Like, it's the data pretty much proved that playing with Luka helped him. Then last year, he spends more time off the bench. They don't use him as much with Luka. They use him as a creator of offense in the second unit. I don't know if it's staggering the situation with him, but I think he's going to be fine. Whereas Dorian, I think, is who he is. Dorian is a role player who is useful, whose reputation as a 3-and-D guy isn't really what matches reality because he's neither especially proficient in either. Dorian's a solid player and a useful hand. I can see where the lapses happen there. With Tim, I just feel like there's too much offensive capability and there's too much track record in variety and in volume to think that it won't get better at some point. And the same comes for Reggie Bullock. I just don't believe that Reggie Bullock will be this bad all year. I know we said this time last year about Josh Richardson, you know, but it's a completely different thing. This man is here to do two things, and he has done those two things quite well. And those two things don't
career,
really,
yeah
it, historically, right? Obviously not so far, but historically, yes. And the situation, those are not as situationally dependent as Josh Richardson being a creator and having to initiate offense. I feel like it will be fine with Bullock. I feel like it will be fine with Tim Hardaway. I feel like with Dorian, if it's less fine, you know, I mean, it's, Dorian's a high floor, low ceiling player. If he becomes a low floor player, then you have real problems because that's, as we've talked many, many times about the ceiling and the floor thing, Dorian can only do so much. But yeah, I mean, I'm word vomiting because we talked about this stuff too. I've seen too much of Hardaway to think that it won't get resolved. That's really where I'm at with that. And if it doesn't get resolved with Dorian, you can move on fairly easily from that. You need Hardaway to get it together with the money they're paying him.
The Mavericks have the least shots attempted within 5 feet of the rim in the entire league. And as much of a problem as that is, they were not great the past 2 years with this stat either. But I watched Cleveland again collapse all five players in the paint. And, you know, that's not a system or a scheming thing that they can do to solve that. It's a personnel and lack of shot making.
If you don't make shots, man. That. Yeah, if you don't hit the shots, there's no incentive for the defense. I mean, the defense just doesn't care about those guys.
Kevin Love ignored Dorian
Finney-Smith
on Monday night. Like, multiple possessions in a row, straight up ignored him and got punished one time because Dorian made one first half three. And What are you supposed to do in that situation if you're this team?
Is the answer just more Maxey? I mean, I don't know that there's an answer necessarily on the roster, but if we're just looking at the roster, I mean, is it play Maxey more?
He was on pace to play 32 minutes. He came out with okay. 7 minutes with the rest of the starters. Yeah. He was you can't get more than 32 minutes out of him. You can start him.
Yeah. I guarantee you
Maxey probably starts tomorrow night, Wednesday night. If not, you know, it's gonna happen very soon.
Might as well try. Because what they're doing right now isn't working. You know, it's one thing when people say pull the plug on Dwight Powell and your move is Willie Cauley-Stein. That's not going to get you anywhere. Maxey Kleba could, and you might as well try in the early going. And I think,
right.
If nothing else, you know, there's been – Brian Demarest did something for us last week. I talked about this before the piece even came out. But essentially, like, you know, they are trying things that they have copped to trying things, almost like what Milwaukee did last year when, you know, Milwaukee went to the postseason before they won the title. Their defensive schemes were not working. So they changed things up last year. They tried the approaches. It lost the regular season games. It worked in the playoffs. It was worth it. At some point, I mean, what's the leash for trying things and trying to figure out this identity and saying, all right, let's throw more stuff out there, get the ball and see what sticks before you start getting really worried? Because how much leeway do you have?
Look, the cart is before the horse. This team isn't good enough to experiment. Learn how to win a game under like whatever circumstance you can. This is a kitchen sink team right now. This team should just be trying to win games and win them as easily as they can. The Bucks were dominant in the regular season. Right. I mean, dominant. Yes.
No, that's true.
Before they did this. The Utah Jazz are experimenting a little bit more. But the Utah Jazz have been a dominant regular season team. This is the one seed. The Mavs are not that, man. This is not a team that has the luxury of experimentation.
Just to frame this again, this is multiple issues, and we're focusing in on one. This is like they have personnel issues, yeah. And we've talked about that sure. at length. We're not talking about this about that really this podcast. They have coaching issues, and I think we're going to circle there shortly, but we're not talking about that in what we've just been talking about the past 10 minutes. We're talking about a performance issue. We're talking about performance issues that we expect more from this team. This team has proven time and time again over the past two seasons, over the careers of these players, that they should be playing better than they are right now, regardless of the coaching and the personnel, regardless of how good Luka is, you know, if he's at his very most dominant versus some level, you know, just a couple steps below that, as we've talked about. And that one is just baffling to me. I don't get it. I don't understand why the performance of this team, if you want to look at, you know, it's the open shots they missed against Cleveland, and they probably lose that game anyway because we talked about how good Cleveland actually is. But, you know, it's not a 30-point blowout in the fourth quarter with the starters getting pulled with 7 minutes left if they just hit some open corner threes. The loss on Saturday against Washington, you know, that's a more egregious example of a team that did not perform as well as they should have. And as much as this personnel issue, like, almost overrides this conversation, it doesn't, because they should be better. Like, the personnel issue is the through line of the Mavericks over the past 3 years, but it's not the specific issue that we're talking about, because they, you know, like, we've talked about that. It's performance. They're not playing as well as they should. Do you hear how frustrated and confused and baffled I am right now? Like,
it's dealing with human behavior, right? Like, we can look and we can say, all right, well, Tim Hardaway has done this the last few years, but if Tim Hardaway doesn't perform to the level that we've come to expect, well, then it throws off everything else. Other guys are not going to be as good because he's not as good. He's not as much of a threat. Yeah. Now, you would think that Jalen Brunson being so awesome would help, but it hasn't lifted up those other guys yet. Porzingis having a few good games in a row, that was great. And then what happened, you know, now what happens when it falls apart and he has 9 points, you know, what did he score? One point in the second half the other night, something like that.
So you know,
when he's not out there, whether physically not out there or mentally not out there, whatever it is that gets him out of the games, whether it's an injury or otherwise, it just, you only have one guy.
Yeah.
From the personal perspective, the one way I think it affects the Cleveland loss, outside of just the team not being talented enough, is that when your center rotation is this bad, when you don't have a physically dominant center that can just scrap and move and get points for you in a way that they were not getting, you know, it kind of reduces you to being stuck with this, you know, with this main option of offensive production that isn't working. And, you know, it is just down to Luka repeating over and over again these passes to open shooters who are not making them. There's no adjustment to be made to get points elsewhere. And, you know, yeah, Porzingis is probably never going to be effective against players like that, opponents like that. And I want to be able to do my job better. I want to be able to analyze this team and like explain it. That is so frustrating. It's just like what are we doing here?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Do you guys have anything else, or do you want to talk just a little bit about coaching and what effects or reasoning we've seen from them this season?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we can look. I think we've harangued the roster enough, right? Like, I mean, right. There's only so much that we can say. We've talked them into the ground, but I think that the coaching change has been evident in the offense, just outside of the 3-point shooting performance. It's a clunkier system. Maybe the look, I don't know. Maybe these guys are having trouble finding rhythm. I don't know exactly what it is, but I will say that in Jason Kidd's defense, this is kind of how it goes for new coaches usually anyway. There's a feeling out process. You're trying to figure things out. You're trying to figure out which of your principles are going to fit this team. Ultimately, the roster wins out. This was my whole argument about Rick Carlisle going to Indiana and everyone expecting them to all of a sudden – you know, be a 6 seed or a 5 seed. And it's like, well, maybe just because some of the other teams are bad, but that roster's maxed out. Again, same here. So when we're looking at what Kidd's doing, to a certain degree, he's just at such a disadvantage that it's really hard to judge the results of it. You know, you have to dig into processes and things like that. And there's some stuff. I mean, the post-up stuff, like I mentioned, it's not bad. You've got to kind of zig when the league is zagged, and especially when you're not making shots. And I do think the rule changes could be an opportunity for more scoring in the post. And Mike, before we started recording, you were telling me that Kristaps is scoring better than ever in the post. And maybe Jason Kidd has something to do with that. Maybe not. I don't know. But I will say that offering a coach the benefit of the doubt for a little while, and especially, I mean, we haven't heard anything bad coming out of the locker room or anything like that. I do just think maybe we're watching some growing pains of a new coach with this roster that really isn't even all that great.
Yeah, I mean, it's less about the offense, right? Because we talked about the personnel issues. We also talked about the fact that they're pretty openly trying new things. And I agree with you that an emphasis on the mid-range and the inside game now could pay dividends in the long run. For me, it is about the defense, because Cade came in preaching defense. That was his big thing. Whenever anybody asked him, what do you learn in LA? It was always defense. You know, we're to be a tougher defensive-minded team. But when you watch this team on defense, yeah, there are obvious personnel issues, right? We don't have to, you know, when you have Luka Doncic, Jalen Brunson, and Tim Hardaway Jr. on the floor at the same time, and then you have Porzingis on there too, of course you're going to give up points. But it isn't even about ability so much as sometimes I just feel like this team is terrible at rotating defensively, for instance. There are so many times in a given game, that Washington game, you saw it a lot. Guys were just not moving where they should be, where they were getting baited on moves they shouldn't. There were gaps. That's execution stuff. This is not a dumb team. So what's happening from a schematic standpoint? Is there a disconnect? Because remember,
well, they're not connected. That you said, is there a disconnect? They're not connected from a communication standpoint.
Sure, maybe it's communication versus scheme. I was saying disconnect from the scheme versus them, or maybe it's just on the floor communication and they can't talk amongst themselves in the moment. What I do know is you're dead on that there is an adjustment period with coaches, but the flip side is that this team, which has not changed much personnel-wise a year ago, going into a season, and we talked about this before, and you know this if you listen to this podcast, season starts sooner than anybody intended. Kristaps Porzingis, nowhere close to healthy. Luka Doncic, nowhere close to in shape. But they at least looked a lot more coherent than what we see now with a full training camp and offseason for everybody to get to the same page and get healthy and listen to this new coach. And if there is a benefit to the new coach, it's that, you know, everybody's engaged in a way that it's like a marriage. When Rick Carlisle's around for so long on the same team for so long, it's easy to tune something out. Not saying that's what happened, but it's a lot easier to versus this is the new coach. This is the new regime. These are the new Mavericks. If you are ever going to be engaged from the jump, that is it. And Kidd had their attention to implement principles. And we don't know. We're not in the practices all the time. We don't know if it's on the players or the coaches or something getting lost in translation. But when you see them on the floor, like Dave said, they don't look like they're communicating at all defensively. And that, to me, is something that is beyond pure skill set. That is something is happening from either the top down or once these guys are on the floor together, something is getting lost. That has to get fixed. That's not a talent thing. That is just a streamlined basketball IQ communication plan sort of thing.
I don't know anything about marriage. Y'all are the experts there. I don't know shit about that. But it seems like a great analogy. I think that's right. And I think, you know, just that KP is healthy and moving, and Tim Hardaway Jr. wasn't, you know, more tuned in and able to, you know, rotate effectively last season than he's been this season, and he's been poor at it both years. But, you know, coming in with a guy you can actually trust as a defensive anchor, like that's the perspective shift that they had this year or should have had this year. And I agree, you know, it hasn't been the case. I believe right now their defensive record is worse than it was last year, at least as compared to the league, where it ranks in the league. Obviously defensive ratings are all better than they were last year because offense is down league wide.
Yeah,
so yeah, I don't know.
And you know, look, I think if you were thinking about what the best realistic defensive lineup they can put on the floor is, right now you probably can't do that because you're talking about Luka's obviously on the floor, Porzingis is on the floor, one of Brunson or Hardaway. I think ideally, and I think it was Austin who tweeted this a few weeks ago, I think it was this lineup. It's definitely the lineup I most want to see. I would love to see them get to a point where they can play Doncic, one of Brunson or Hardaway, Reggie Bullock, Maxey, Kristaps. That is still, you know, they can't do that right now because Reggie Bullock is not hitting shots. And that's just, you can't rely on him down the stretch. But if he gets to that point, that at least makes me wonder what can this team do on both ends. But even then, with a good rim protector in Porzingis, a guy in Maxey who's a weak side shot blocker, and Bullock who's a very good perimeter defender, not an elite one, but a very good one, even then, you're still at least one perimeter defender short, and nobody in that group can defend a pick and roll ball handler. So what do you do? Even if these guys do rotate, you don't have anything you can throw on the floor. You can put Frank out there. Great. No offense. You know, it's a sliding tile puzzle. Every time you cover up one hole, there is something vacant on offense, on defense. And I just, even if Kidd, the big thing that Carlisle did was more often than not, Carlisle reined every bit of what he had out of this group, and he trusted that strategically. We don't know if Kidd can or can't yet because it's too soon. But right now, it's clear that just this team is not playing to its potential. And maybe by season's end, we'll know how much of it is on them versus how much is on Jason. But the bottom line is, if they go through another month of this, I don't know what you do. I mean, you sit here and say, we can all sit here and say they got to do something in the deadline. But it's easy to say that. It's another thing to actually do it. But
it's very unlikely this podcast has any different tone or tenor if Carlisle is coach. Do we agree with that?
I would 100% agree with that because nothing has really changed. Man, the NBA is a player sport, not a coach's sport. Coaches can change stuff on the margins, and obviously you can have a bad coach completely tank a team. Like, a good team will lose games with a bad coach. I don't know if Jason Kidd is a bad coach for this team yet. It just hasn't been long enough for me to say that or not. I just don't know what any other coach would necessarily do different with these guys, especially when they're not making shots.
Right.
Yeah. I think we keep saying they're not making shots, but the truth is, man, like, they're the worst 3-point shooting team in the league, correct?
I don't think they're worst, but they're like bottom three.
And okay. They're that good at open shots. So nobody's hitting anything when they're contested.
Yeah.
And again, like, this is the 6 feet away. Like, they're much worse on the 4 to 6 feet range. And that's.
Yeah. But NBA tracking data is not great.
They're 22nd in the league on 3-point percentage right now. They're hitting 33%.
Okay.
And on wide open, which is the defender 6 feet away, they're 41%. And that's fifth in the league. And so, yeah, it's not like, yeah, they're missing open shots. We see it happen, but it's not just that. It's not just that at all. Like, Tim Hardaway Jr., where he cooked last year was, you know, just going by the way the NBA stat site breaks it down. It was that defender within 4 to 6 range, which they define as open. And they're a lot worse in that category. But, you know, those are still open shots. And those are ones that they're not hitting.
Can I posit an idea that it's literally, it just occurred to me. What if a lot of it is conditioning, and these guys they're playing longer, not as many stoppages, and this team is just they're not in the best shape.
You could argue Luka sets a tone there too.
Sure.
Yep.
I could argue he's the symphony orchestra of not being in shape. Yeah.
Okay, this is a depressing talk. Y'all want to close on one slightly lighter note about Jason Kidd and the way he talks about media or talks to the media?
Yes.
Yes.
I know y'all don't consume as many post-game quotes of his, but I know you've seen some and things like that. He has very clearly taken a very hyper-positive approach to post-game, pre-game, practice, media sessions. And I thought he gave the funniest quote of the season. I don't know if y'all saw it in the article I wrote.
I think I know where you're going with this, but go ahead.
Yeah. So he got asked about Moses Brown, and Moses Brown started on Monday night and clearly was not good. He was not good at all. He is not up for NBA defense at this point. And Kidd has barely said a negative thing about the team at all this season. Every once in a while you get like a negative trend he's identifying. I think he said the transition defense stinks in the Monday postgame press conference after, you know, but he was still even then pretty positive. So he gets asked about Moses Brown and he's like, he was +2. He played great. He was +2. And then he pauses for a while and he's like, it's a positive world. We'll take the positives.
Well, it's a negative world. Take the positive, which is great. I mean, it's a great mindset.
And I'm legitimately like, I legitimately think that, you know, understanding that's his mindset, I was legitimately amused by that quote.
Because, it's a positive world.
That's just a masterclass PR. Like, if that's the way he's chosen to approach these sessions, and like it or not, like, that's I get it. And
fake it till you make it. To
be able to find the one thing that you can spin with Moses Brown is like actually impressive.
That's
like,
good.
In all seriousness,
I think that this approach. I mean, if we're just looking at. I mean, the whole thing coming into this year was there growth as a human being for Jason Kidd, right? As a basketball coach, as a human being. And the reports coming out of LA is that, he was a model citizen and all of this stuff. Fine. This is great. By all means, be positive. Don't be negative.
I was talking to someone who knows him, and that was also the theory, is that this is why he's doing that. He's trying to rewrite his image as a coach. And whether he should get that chance again, you know, that's a much larger debate.
I don't necessarily love I don't love coaches that go straight to criticizing players in the media. So I would much rather see a guy, and this is just generally, I'd much rather see a coach try to say positive things about his players publicly, and then you talk to him privately if you want to criticize. I understand it makes your job more difficult, Tim, because right. You do want his honest opinion. But maybe just like us, Jason Kidd realizes, well, I don't really know what's going on here yet either, because it's pretty yeah. new. Well,
whatever issues I have with Kidd, it's not his hyper-positivity. I'm fine with that. Like, I think it's amusing. I think I'm impressed. That's fun. I'm impressed he found. Yeah,
hey, it's fun. Maybe Moses Brown would be a positive if he played more minutes. I don't know. Did you ask Jason Kidd that? Maybe. I mean, plus two
not
and 11 minutes.
Not if they have to play
minutes.
Jared Allen every night. No plus four. Post-up scorer Jared Allen, who had a career 28 points. Sorry, yeah. Mike. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, listen, the whole rationale for why, if you listen to Mark Cuban's quotes about why they hired him, you know, at one point, very soon after, it was the first interview he did, it was on some podcast, but he was talking about how he was kind of referencing Steve Nash in Brooklyn about how the X's and O's are out. It's about relationships. Look how people love Nash. And it raised everybody's eyebrows because it's like anybody who was here for both of those guys, that they're very different people. But if this is the new Jason Kidd, and he really is this way, and clearly he's made an effort with the whole leadership council thing and all this stuff to engage his players, to be more, you know, accessible with them as people, to be more of a positive influence. He should keep being this way with the media. He should keep doing that. That's what he was sold as being this positive breath of fresh air. So as far as I'm concerned, I hope he keeps doing it, because that at least shows me that he is consistent, and you need consistency with any sort of process. If he is doing this now, and this was absolutely one of the raps on him in Milwaukee, once shit hit the fan and things started getting bad, then he flew off the handle. Well, if this team keeps sinking and he stays positive, to me, that doesn't show weakness. That shows he's got the discipline to be consistent in who he is and who he wants to be, even through the bad times. And you know what? That is growth. That is entirely – this team was not betting on Jason Kidd circa Milwaukee to turn it around. They were betting on the new improved Jason Kidd. So let's see this more and more all year. By all means, if you want to say this is a positive world, because God knows nobody else I know thinks that, more power to you, Jason. You do you, man.
We all want it to be a positive world.
Yeah.
And I think, positive coaching, there's a positive coaching alliance. That, like, it is a thing. Positive coaching is good. It has benefits. It works way better than negative coaching. And certainly you hope that there is some criticism behind the scenes of his players when they need it in a constructive and hopefully positive manner, and not running guys out of the league. That's what we want. That's all I care about. These quotes are fun, though. I like it. Good for Moses Brown.
Let's do an only positive podcast next week.
I'm in on that. There's a lot of positives. Hey, you know, there's one big positive that this team has is that Luka Doncic is 22 years old, and most great players didn't win anything before they were 25. So relax.
We'll talk a lot about 22-year-old Luka, and we'll talk about Boban, and the podcast will last 3 minutes. But
Jalen
need
Brunson.
More Boban.
Only positive.
We got a little Jalen Brunson in the positivity episode.
That's true. I've got something.
Tim Hardaway's excellent beard.
It is a great beard.
It is a really good beard.
It's better than all of our beards. Not Dave. Dave has a great beard.
Whoa.
I was going to say, Dave has a great beard. Dave has a great beard. It's better than my beard. Tim
I just got mine trimmed up a little bit, but it's a little patchy. I won't try to pretend
like
it's
something. Yeah, you've got some gaps in there. I've got lots of volume, but Tim Hardaway Jr.'s is more like refined and groomed. Dufour has the ideal beard among us on the podcast.
Tim Hardaway and I have a similar beard.
Yeah, that is true.
That might be the first time anybody's ever said that about Dave and Tim Hardaway Jr. But
well,
I was actually
looking at, because I just trimmed my beard yesterday, so it was like very nicely shaped.
That's a Hardaway cut right there?
I hope you went to a barber and showed pictures of Tim Hardaway. It's
give
like,
me that.
You know, like people usually do that with haircuts, but you're just like, hey, can I look like this?
I trim my own beard. I trim my own beard. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Stands on too.
Yeah.
Can you, Dave, can you hit wide open threes?
Yes, I can.
All right. Well, you have two things on Tim now. So.
I'm also the same height as Jalen Brunson, so don't think I'm going to hang out in the corner.
All right, this is a good time to wrap, so let's get out of here. Thanks both of you guys for being here. I thought it was a fun, if frustrating, episode.
You said right off the top, got a fun one for him.
I think you said a great one. This might be our most unhinged episode. This is the most unhinged thing we've done in a while.
I came in hot, guys. I was in the pool. I did my aquatic workout.
Big flex.
Well, I mean, not my pool. I joined a rehabilitation center.
Tim Hardaway probably has his own pool. So
he's got that on you.
Sure. And, you know, I was out there with this group of ladies that I do this aquatic class with. So I was just fired up when I came home to do the pod. I was just ready.
Amazing. Amazing. All right. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. See y'all then.
He plays Fortnite just like me. I am 34.
Don't fight the future, honey. Don't fight the future. The future is Luca, Big Dick Doncic from the home of Melania Trump. How many kids you have? Don't fight the future, Carl Tart. Don't fight the future, it tears me apart. Don't fight the future, please be nice to Luca. Future four-time MVP.
Oh my God! Oh! Shut it down! Let's go home! It's a wrap, Doug!
That is a wrap.